This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. U.S. President Donald J. Trump and First Lady Melania Trump have both tested positive for the coronavirus. What does this mean for the White House and the campaign? Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. Shortly after we learned that Hope Hicks, one of Mr. Trump's most trusted aides, tested positive Thursday evening, President Trump tweeted that he tested positive early Friday morning. VOA's White House correspondent Steve Herman writes that, quote, the 74-year-old president is considered to be in a higher risk category for COVID-19 because of his age and weight, closed quote. President Trump is 74 years old and is considered officially obese. Herman says that the president and first lady will start their quarantine immediately and all political events were ordered canceled. President Trump now becomes a member of an elite club of other world leaders, such as UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, who have tested positive for coronavirus. Like Bolsonaro, President Trump deliberately played down the virus almost from its inception, casting blame on China and saying recently at campaign rallies that the virus is in its waning days. Time will tell if Mr. Trump develops symptoms that require hospitalization, as occurred with Boris Johnson, or if he has a mild case, as with Brazil's Bolsonaro. So how will this development scramble the last few weeks of the presidential campaign? We will also discuss several important outcomes from the first and possibly the last of the presidential debates before the November 3rd election, for which Americans across the country have begun to cast ballots. For more on President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis and fallout from the debate, we turn to our favorite political analysts. John Fortier is Director of Governmental Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. And as we continue to social distance due to the coronavirus pandemic, both gentlemen join me via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Good to be here.
So, John Fortier, let me begin with you. What is your reaction to the news that President Trump tested positive for COVID? And would you put this in the category of what we call an October surprise before the election?
Well, first of all, I think everybody wishes the president and first lady a speedy recovery. And I think there is hope, and we really do, for the sake of the president and first lady and the sake of the campaign, hope that this is a mild case, that things can return to normal quickly. In the short term, there are certainly some issues like the debates that you mentioned. Will we have debates, or maybe we'll have delayed debates or slightly different formats? It's going to be difficult for the president to participate, at least in the very short term. And similarly, the president is someone who really does thrive from being out of the campaign trail and likes to be before his supporters. And at least for the meantime, that's going to be curtailed. This is the key point of the campaign. I know we've had a lot of attention and people feel very seriously about it, but in some ways, this still is the time that people are really turning to the campaign, where the maybe few, but still some undecided voters are really looking to make up their minds and seeing both candidates side by side. So it is a tough time for this to happen. We hope people recover quickly, the president and first lady. But again, it's a time that people have great interest in the election and it is going to affect the campaign to some extent.
So Jim Kessler, turning to you, what's your reaction to this news and the uncertainty that it injects into the campaign?
Like John, I wish the president and the first lady well and a speedy recovery and hope it's a mild case. And also others in the White House who have contracted the virus, Hope Hicks, who's one of his senior advisors, Ronna McDaniel, who is the head of the Republican Party. And I expect you're going to find more. They've been together a lot. So I think in the sense there was a spreader event in the White House and it's going to infect a lot of people and wish them well. In one sense, it upends the campaign. In another, it doesn't. Let me start with the way that it doesn't. Donald Trump is not doing well in this race. He is behind in the national polls by an average of over 7 points. There are 6 swing states that are going to determine the election. Joe Biden needs to win 3 of those to win. He's ahead in all 6. And in some of those, he's way ahead. So this was a campaign that was already slipping away from the president. This COVID diagnosis for him also doesn't help him, not just because, as John said, he can't go out on the campaign trail, which he likes to do, but the number one reason why Donald Trump isn't doing well is his handling of the coronavirus. And he downplayed it really from the start. And the timing of him getting the virus right now is a reminder to people that he hasn't handled it well. Cases are spiking again in the United States in about 25 different states. And it also is a reminder that COVID-19 is a pre-existing condition that under the healthcare law known as Obamacare, you cannot be discriminated against in terms of price and getting insurance. Well, it is a law that Donald Trump is trying to get rid of through legislation and through the courts. So it brings the healthcare issue to the fore, which is also not the terrain the president wants to fight for. So I think that it's going to upend the mechanics of the campaign, but the dynamic of the campaign right now is Trump being behind. This maybe just solidifies that.
Let me just jump in, Carol, because I think, you know, some of what Jim says is possible, but I think it's a little bit uncertain what the political implications of this are. We sometimes see the American people rallying behind presidents in times of trouble. We don't know. I do think that there is a danger for the Biden campaign making the argument strongly that I told you so or it's your own fault, I think would be a mistake. First and foremost, I think the American people are going to want to make sure that the president is okay. And, you know, obviously there are some differences of opinion here in terms of how things are going in the COVID case and how much the president is to blame. But I do think, again, Democrats have a potential trap that they could fall into by being so strongly political at a time where people are going to be concerned some with the president's physical well-being.
Certainly, that's a point well taken. But let me turn back to you, Jim Kessler, because I haven't been hearing anything of that sort from the Democrats or Joe Biden in particular. Everybody has been wishing the president well. I don't think they would fall into the trap of, you know, I told you so. But it is rather ironic for a person who has played down the virus, as you said, and has deliberately not worn masks and has deliberately held raucous type rallies as if the virus was actually going away when, in fact, it is on the rise in many states. But on the other hand, Joe Biden and he were on the debate stage not too far away, and there was a lot of shouting. It's an airborne virus. So I'm actually wondering what your reaction is to the fact that he was so close to Joe Biden, you know, once again, endangering others. It's one thing if he feels that he's immune, and we know now that he is not, and we all wish him well. But he is really endangering not just those in his campaign inner circle, but, you know, in this case, Mr. Biden and others at his rallies.
Well, that is the wild card of this, is that I woke up to the news about this. And the first thing I thought of was like, oh, well, Joe Biden could have it, too, because they were together on Tuesday night and Hope Hicks started feeling symptoms on Wednesday. And so she was definitely positive on Tuesday. And it's possible that the president was positive on Tuesday as well. And this can spread before you're symptomatic. I do want to touch on John's point about there could be some rallying around the president and Democrats could step too far. I don't think Joe Biden will. I don't think Schumer and Pelosi will. There will certainly be Democrats who will be dancing about this, that, you know, there's a level of disdain in our politics that is like nothing I've ever seen before. I'm not sure how much reaction that's going to be with the American people either. I think we've just gotten so used to angry, polarized politics. I think President Trump has played that political game extraordinarily well and maybe is the leader of that political game, that I just don't know if even if Democrats do go too far and say things that never have been said for past presidents, how much that really matters now. The bar has been changed on the dialogue, unfortunately.
So back to you, John Fortier. As we have all been stating, Mr. Trump has deliberately underplayed the severity of the virus from the beginning. It was a strategy that he actually confessed to Bob Woodward, the longtime journalist whose book Rage reveals this fact. So to what extent do you think the fact that he has staked his campaign on the fact that COVID is almost over and his desire to get back to normal, to what extent does this development, unfortunate development for him, for our country, you know, undermine this message?
We don't know how this is going to play out. It is a wild card. There are different opinions within the parties about how much we should open government, how much tolerance for risk there is. These things go deeper than just Donald Trump. And so, you know, to think we know exactly how this is going to play out, I certainly believe that, of course, the president wouldn't have wanted to wish this upon himself and his wife physically, but also in terms of the campaign, this has got to be a very, very tough time. But for us to assume that, again, everybody is going to hold this view of what I would say is, well, the president wasn't doing enough. He's denying COVID. And therefore, sorry, it happened to him, but it really isn't unexpected. I mean, I think that message is is a really tough message. And Jim may be right that our politics is really pretty polarized. It is. But I still think we would be wise to stay away from that. Last thing, I'll agree with Jim that this was a key point for the race for Donald Trump. He is behind in the polls. It is the time where he might have, and still might, but it's harder, find a way to really define Joe Biden a little bit more. Yes, Joe Biden's a well-known figure, but the undecided people about Joe Biden, they don't know him as well as Trump. There was some possibility of, you know, even just defining him as a typical Democrat where Republicans might come home to the party. All of that, I think that's the greater danger that the president faces. He's just going to have a harder time making this case with a very little bit of time left to make the typical Republican voters come back home for the Republican Party. There are more obstacles in his way to doing that.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first, you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, he's Director of Governmental Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. They joined me via Microsoft Teams, and we're discussing how President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis will affect his reelection campaign as Americans across the country begin to cast their votes for the next president and Congress of the United States. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, here's a shout out to a loyal fan, Ayuba Inuwa from Bauchi, Nigeria. As always, if you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to our discussion and the campaign. Let me get back to you once again, John Fortier. Let's take a look at the debate, because even though it seems a distant memory, it was just a few days ago with a first presidential debate. We don't know how many more debates can actually be held. What was your takeaway, John? It was certainly a raucous debate. How do you see President Trump's strategy of interruption? And did this help him in his need to gain more voters and not just appeal to the base for him?
This was an unprecedented debate. I don't think we've seen anything like this. Of course, debates can be contentious, and we've seen various tough lines over the years, but this was just another level. And look, the president, I think it's been reported that he really had a strategy to be extremely aggressive, and he was. And it was such a raucous debate, and Joe Biden also did participate in this, but there was talking over each other. It was almost hard to hear what was going on. It was, you know, I think sometimes even when one candidate was speaking, and I'll put the president in this category, it was sometimes hard to understand even the argument because it was said so aggressively. It was a very tough debate to watch. I don't actually know what the political implications are. I do think, you know, the president had to do some things or has to do some things over the course of a month to shore up his support. We don't know how these things play out. And I think given the developments with the president having COVID, we might not actually know exactly what the polling says about what happened. I'm sure no one liked the debate because it was unpleasant to watch. Did it have a detrimental effect on the president or perhaps a small positive? We don't know. But I think we hope we don't see that again. And even before, again, this COVID diagnosis of the president, the debate commission was thinking of having some different rules about how you deal with the moderator and how you deal with the other candidate. And I do think also there was some backlash from the president and the president's team that, well, we don't want the moderator shutting down the president. And that is one argument that, you know, sometimes the president was arguing with the moderator, Chris Wallace. And to that point, I think candidates generally, and Donald Trump in particular, have spent a lot of time painting the press as a bad guy. And the Trump campaign, I think, would say it's got to be somewhat unfiltered for the president to have a fair shot. And we don't want moderators shutting down a president or a presidential candidate.
But do you think, John, that he gained some of the types of constituents that he would need really to help him in the polls, suburban women in particular? Do you think he did anything to expand his base?
I actually am not certain about this. I mean, I think the easy answer some people might give is, oh, everybody was turned off by that. I do think part of the president's job here is to define Joe Biden in these weeks before the election. He's less well-defined than is Trump, who everybody has a strong opinion about. So whether that's a more positive message or whether it's a strong contrast message, you know, both may have some effect. So, look, I think there were some dangers in the strategy, but I'm not certain, again, that, you know, it didn't also have some benefits.
Jim Kessler, what did you witness? What was your reaction to the debate? How do you think Biden performed given President Trump's constant interruption? And then Biden also retorted with some choice words, which many people criticized, you know, shut up and et cetera. But what did you witness, and what are the implications of this for both candidates?
Well, it was an ugly night for sure. But, you know, look, it was a good night for Joe Biden and it wasn't a good night for Donald Trump. And you can tell by this spin afterwards, like the Biden people and all Democrats, they were really happy the next day. And the reactions among Republicans, including those very, very loyal to Donald Trump, were very mixed and cautioned about several things and areas where Donald Trump would have to clean up, including a reference to white supremacy that Trump did not disavow by any stretch of the imagination. This is what I came away from this, watching that food fight. Number one, it was clear to me that the Trump team does not really know how to take on Joe Biden from a policy standpoint. They try and paint him as a socialist, but obviously he is not. Biden had easy responses to it. And then Trump's retort was, okay, you just alienated your own far left base. That's not really an argument. Number two is, I think the interruption strategy was to try and fluster Biden. There's the case that the Trump people are trying to make that Biden does not have the mental acuity to be president. Well, Biden handled the interruptions very, very well. I think he just took that issue off the table. But number three, and this is the one that I found most disturbing, I believe, watching that debate, that Donald Trump believes that he cannot win this election if votes are counted fairly and if people are able to vote. And he spent really the last half hour of the debate casting doubt on the legitimacy of the election and the way people are going to vote. And it is his view, it seems to me, that his number one strategy, as he realized that the debate was not working for him, that he went to plan B, which is, I cannot win this thing. I either have to stop people from voting or I have to contest the ballots all the way through. And that, of everything I've seen from this campaign, from the beginning to this very moment right now with the COVID diagnosis, is the saddest thing I've witnessed from President Trump.
John Forty, I'd like to get your reaction to what Jim just said. President Trump once again refused to say that he would accept a peaceful transfer of power, sort of underscoring what Jim Kessler just said. How do you see the fact that President Trump continues to cast doubt on the legitimacy of mail-in ballots, especially now during the pandemic, it's more important than ever, and the fact that he may just not accept the results unless he wins?
Look, I don't think the president was as clear as he should have been, and there have been other cases where he has not been as clear as he should have been also. I believe the president, in a clear result, will concede, as I believe Joe Biden will concede. I think we are going to be on strong ground. Our democracy will be strong. We will have a winner and a loser. I think the most charitable way to read the comments is, you know, the president and his team are worried about really messy election with lots of lawsuits and lots of changes in the election and suits related to the ballots that come in after the election. If there is an extremely close election, we are going to see both sides fighting tooth and nail over every little bit of what's legitimate in this election or not, down to little dots on the ballots. Again, I think the president should have been clearer, and it should be clear that obviously when he loses, he's going to step aside, which he has said, but I think he could be clearer. But again, I think that if we have an election, unless it's extremely close, then we're going to have a winner and a loser. And the close election is the one that really worries me, because both sides might have some legitimate claims about a lot of little things that would make the difference in the election.
I just want to say, I don't think that he is worried about a messy election. I think he is counting on a messy election and that this is his strategy. And he is going out there in rally after rally, and he did it on national television in a debate watched by over 70 million people. And made the case that the entire election is a fraud. And we are not on camera, this is radio, but I am holding up my absentee ballot right now. Should my vote count? You know, I am going to fill it out and mail it in and do everything that is responsible. That vote should count. There is a situation right now where Texas has just reduced the number of polling places for early voting by a factor of 100. And it is really designed to suppress the vote. And they're really removing the polling places where African Americans and Latinos vote. So this is a strategy. Let's not pretend that it is not. This is not a Biden strategy. This is a Trump strategy.
What do you say to that, John Forty?
As I've said before, I don't expect there's going to be, and don't think there has been in the past, wide-scale fraud. I think there are issues that we should care about integrity.
Another point that people are concerned about are so-called poll watchers. Mr. Trump has urged on supporters to, you know, watch the polls, but these aren't really official poll watchers. Their goal seems to be to potentially intimidate voters and suppress voting. This is worrisome too. Does that worry you, John Fortier, particularly, you know, in-person voting?
Look, I think this can all get very complicated. I will say this. I think that part of our system in general is that we do have both parties watching over the electoral process at polling sites, sometimes in the counting of absentee ballots. But we've had some of these changes. And so you're right about the case that was mentioned where someone who is not authorized was seeking to observe. We don't allow just anybody off the street to come in and observe, but we do often and want to have legitimate official representatives of both parties able to watch over the process.
I have a question with respect to these absentee / mail-in ballots. Is it up to each state to determine when they are counted? Because so many people are mailing in their ballots early, way in advance of November 3rd, can they be counted in advance in order to prevent any type of controversy on election night?
Well, like everything in America, each state is different. I think it's a good practice for states to be able to start to open those absentee ballots and maybe not officially count them, but to prepare them and put them in the machine and do everything but the final tally, which won't happen until election day. Many states do that early. Some states don't allow that really till election day. But I do think it would be wise for states to be starting earlier, but also this move to extending the deadlines. Even from a Democratic perspective, they may think it's a great thing to have this extra time, but the possibility of confusing voters or having things come in late or extending the process, I don't think is in anybody's interest. But the simple answer is different states are doing it different ways, and we're having some court challenges and some possible last minute changes in a number of states.
Jim Kessler, you get the last word.
I think there's one party that is trying to get people to vote, and there's one party that is trying to suppress the vote. The party that's trying to get people to vote is Democrats, and the party that's trying to suppress them are Republicans. And it's happening everywhere, okay? It's happening in South Carolina, it's happening in Texas, it's happening in Florida, and it's happening in its own ways in Pennsylvania. We have a president who has over and over and over again said this election is a fraud, it is rigged, the system is broken, and they're trying to steal it from me. And he has said that repeatedly, and I don't think he should be given a pass. And just because there are some places where I believe Democrats overreach too, I think a ballot should have a postmark before Election Day. That's some very de minimis cases. Here you have the President of the United States really casting doubt on the entire process that we're trying to uphold. In Pennsylvania, this is a good example to you. It is now a state where it's much more easy to mail in a ballot than in the past. It's also a state where the governor, who is a Democrat, wants those ballots to be counted early, to prep those ballots so that the count can be done quickly. The Republican legislature is stopping that, won't allow that to happen. Why? Because they know mail-in voters tend to be Democratic voters in this election. On election night, Donald Trump will have the lead in Pennsylvania, and then they will start to say, stop the count. It's illegitimate. And that is their plan. You'll see it in Pennsylvania just as sure as I'm sitting here. And it is a way to cheat. It is a way to cheat the American people out of a free and fair election. And it is the most disturbing thing that Donald Trump has done, in my view, in his 4 years as president.
All right, gentlemen, so much more to talk about. To underscore what you just said, Jim Kessler, it's true that many Republican-controlled legislatures in swing states like Pennsylvania are trying to interfere with the count of the votes and the assignment of electors. But that will have to be for another program in the very near future, because for now, that is all the time we have on this politics edition of Encounter. As always, I'd like to thank my guest, John Fortier. He's Director of Governmental Studies at the Bipartisan Policy Center, and Jim Kessler, Senior Vice President for Policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, once again, thanks for a terrific conversation, and we'll check in with you in a few weeks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.